Chapter 13. The Fruits of Passion. Beyond Definition. I often think how terribly sad it is that so many people, the Thank God It's Friday Brigade, are not in the least bit passionate about what they are doing with their lives. I'm talking about the ones for whom life is all about making a living, as opposed to making every living moment count. My wife tells people it is my fetish. I have heard that Tony Collins, who runs Virgin Trains, has often said, "I am a nutcase about it." Maybe. But whatever I have contributed to the success of the Virgin companies, I believe that, above all else, my hardwired passion, some call it obsession, for consistently giving our customers both internal and external a better work environment or service experience than they can find anywhere else, is what's at the very heart of everything that I, and by extension the Virgin brand, stands for. I genuinely believe that if you care passionately enough, you can take just about any facet of the human experience and improve upon it. Now, while the words passion and Virgin, note the small v, may not be something you are accustomed to seeing in the same sentence, passion, capital P, is unquestionably the secret sauce, aka the brand essence, of every one of Virgin's scores of highly diverse businesses. In the same way that you cannot be almost unique or partly pregnant, true passion isn't something that comes in half measures. You are either 100% behind the quest for excellence, 100% of the time, or you aren't really a player. As a leader, you cannot possibly expect your core brand values to be understood, embraced, and become ingrained in the psyche of your people if you yourself are not passionately and uncompromisingly committed to them. I am sorry if this might come across as overly trite or preachy, but if you fail to understand the significance of having and sharing such a palpable passion for what you do, then the chances are that you really do not belong in a leadership role. Passion is innate. The first thing that has to be recognized is that one cannot train someone to be passionate. It's either in their DNA or it's not. Believe me, I have tried and failed on more than one occasion, and it cannot be done, so don't waste your time and energy trying to light a fire under flame-resistant people. If that basic, smoldering fire is not innate, then no amount of stoking is ever going to ignite it. The exact same principle applies to positive attitudes in people. You don't train attitudes, you have to hire them. It always amuses me when I hear people declaring that someone has an attitude, as this is always said with a negative connotation. The fact is that having an attitude is absolutely fine, just as long as it is consistently positive and upbeat, or, put in another way, passionate. One of the key elements of what has become known as the Virgin Way is giving our people the autonomy, freedom, support, and a highly flexible, in everything except quality, brand image that gives them the tools to go out and make amazing things happen. It is this passion-fed formula that has allowed the Virgin Group to launch hundreds of new Virgin companies in scores of very diverse businesses, and I have no doubt that it will continue to do so for many years to come. Over the years, the Virgin Group of companies has been very fortunate in identifying a steady stream of passionate business leaders. Many come from outside the Virgin family, but some are homegrown, like Brett Godfrey, who started Virgin Blue in Australia. Brett is an Australian who, after about 5 years with Virgin Atlantic, moved over to the finance area at Brussels-based Virgin Express, a relatively short-lived European airline we operated in the mid-90s. I'd never met Brett, but started hearing nothing but good reports of his steadying influence on Virgin Express's multiple problems. For a numbers guy, he had the reputation of being a really good people person, which was something we desperately needed to unite the staff, having gone through three CEOs in a little over 12 months. With all the uncertainty and constant changes of direction at Virgin Express, inevitably the spectre of unions had raised its ugly head, something that at the time had never before happened in Virgin. And it was in fact the union leadership that came to me to suggest that the Australian was by far and away the best candidate for the vacant CEO job. I was a little concerned as to their motives. Did they perhaps want Brett because they thought he'd be a pushover? But we decided to give him a shot and initially slotted him in as acting CEO. We knew quickly we had made the right choice. Brett soon managed to get the unions on side, and in so doing sidestepped a total meltdown and stabilized the situation. Apart from the fact that I have never been a fan of acting roles, it seemed a no-brainer to ask Brett to accept the CEO position on a permanent basis. Normally, offering a CEO role is something that generates an excited response, but in this instance, Brett looked very awkward and almost embarrassed as he responded with, well, sorry, Richard, but I am going to have to say no, as my wife and I have decided it's time for us to take our two boys back home to Australia. Nobody had anticipated this response, so I was shocked and more than a little disappointed, but admired him for putting his young family in front of his career. It was then that, according to Brett, I uttered the words that were to change his life forever. All I said was, "Okay, and if there's anything you would like to do in Australia, be sure to let me know." To which, with a big smile, Brett responded, "Well, actually, Richard, I'm glad that you asked, as there is one thing I'd very much love to discuss with you." It was only then that I learned that Brett had been working diligently for 5 years on a business plan to start an innovative, new, domestic airline down under. It seemed he'd been seeking investors for several years, and without my knowledge, had already pitched it to the Virgin executive team, who had rejected it. As I would learn, their rejection of the project was based on a mixture of conventional wisdom and standard accounting, and, at a glance, seemed like a very rational decision. Of course, my personal brand of wisdom has seldom been known for its rationality. So much so that one of many things I've been called over the years is the ultimate "don't confuse me with the facts, man." Something perhaps spurred by my legendary inability to read complex balance sheets. So when Brett gushed out an excited overview of his Australian Airlines business plan, my immediate take on it was more instinctive than by the book, a book that I have never really read. More importantly, however, what I detected in Brett that day was something that the executive team had clearly overlooked. A passionate belief in the need for and viability of what he was proposing. It was also outrageously reminiscent of the opportunity we'd seized upon 15 years earlier with Virgin Atlantic, a plan that my colleagues at Virgin Records had unanimously condemned as utterly outlandish. Brett saw a crying need for a new, disruptive airline model in the stagnant Australian market. And the passion I saw in his eyes when talking about his vision sold me on taking a serious second look at it. Given the nod, it didn't take Brett long to successfully reaffirm some of his business plan's bold projections, and we were off to a flyer. Our initial $10 million investment to start what would become Virgin Blue, now rebranded Virgin Australia, turned out to be one of the smartest we have ever made. Putting it differently, I suppose, with tongue firmly in cheek, I could say it was a classic case of screw it, let's blew it.
Sorry.
Envisaging visionaries. Brett is just one of many true visionaries I have been lucky to know with the passion, drive, focus, and skills to turn their often seemingly impossible dreams into game-changing realities. Like a lot of people before him, Elon Musk had a vision to build a commercially viable electric car. This is a space in which all the early movers have focused their attention on the mass market by developing affordable, compact, fuel-saving vehicles, almost completely devoid of anything in the way of sex appeal. Musk decided instead to come at it from the premium sports car end of the market and over time move into more mainstream vehicles. The luxury-slash-sports sedan market is much smaller in unit sales opportunities, but hugely effective in switching the mindset of influential car owners to finally wanting to own an electric car for looks, performance, and cool first adopter cachet as opposed to just fuel efficiency. And, let's be honest, if you can afford to fork out the price of a luxury vehicle, the cost of fuel is usually the last thing on your mind. The $70,000 Tesla Model S not only looks like a very cool sports car, but behaves like one. It reportedly accelerates from 0 to 60 mph in an incredible 3.7 seconds, and, for those like me who have a conscience about such things, it is almost twice as energy efficient as the homely, sector-leading Toyota Prius. And as if all that were not enough, the influential Consumer Reports magazine ranked the Tesla as the best we have ever tested, with a 99% overall rating. Rate this one an A on all counts. Of course, Tesla is not Elon Musk's first big success at breaking new ground in emerging industries. His vision of creating a new form of payment to accommodate the unique requirements of online retail sales started life as X.com and soon morphed into PayPal. His other current major dream coming true is SpaceX, which, along similar lines to Virgin Galactic, is developing a private sector satellite launch vehicle to take over where NASA left off. There is even talk of Musk merging his PayPal and space ventures with PayPal Galactic to tackle the challenges of off-Earth payments. I will have to give some more thought to that one. In any case, Elon Musk's successes at Tesla, PayPal, and SpaceX only serve to demonstrate the incredible results that can flow from vision and leadership coming together in one inspired individual with the assistance of an army of equally inspired followers. Passion knows passion. Another great advantage to having truly passionate leaders is their inherent ability to recognize raw passion in others when they see it. If Tony Collins thinks that I am the one who's a nutcase about customer service, then I am happy to report that he is right there with me every step of the way. Tony joined Virgin Trains in 1999 from the company that was building our rolling stock and has been head honcho there since 2004. He is a pragmatic, straight-talking, call a spade a bloody shovel kind of a guy, and his impassioned, take-no-prisoners approach to making our rail service the very best in the business has been a joy to behold. He was fast, to paraphrase my favorite phrase, when he said to me one day, "This is a case of screw it, let's undo it, then do it again." If you will please excuse another punishing pun, Tony is the rail deal. He totally embraces the belief that your frontline people who deliver the service are the business. He supports them to the hilt, puts his trust in them, listens to their observations, good and bad, and in return expects them to bleed virgin red in the same way that he does. Turning around the crumbling ruin of a business that was the British rail system for generations was no mean feat for anyone. The kind of a calamity of an organization we inherited from British Rail is illustrated by the story of how their train drivers once threatened to go on strike over management demands that they improve their abysmal on-time performance, and maybe even have a train leave on time once in a while. The union representing the drivers argued there was nothing in their collective bargaining agreement that specified their members had to own watches, and so inferred that as a result, they could not be held responsible for on-time departures. I think it was Timex that was the beneficiary of a very large order for property of BR inscribed watches. Hard to believe, I know, but that was the prevalent kind of employee no-can-do attitude that we inherited. So, with or without a brand like Virgin behind it, the kind of transformation that Tony and his people have achieved with our train set has been nothing short of miraculous. Tony is one of those people who always has a ready supply of wonderful stories, but the one that really stuck with me was a tale he told me over dinner one night about a cleaner he spotted one day on one of our trains. Tony was doing one of his routine but ad hoc check rides when he spotted a uniformed employee who was doing a quite exceptional job with our passengers. She didn't know Tony was watching as she helped an elderly couple to their seats, passed out newspapers and so forth, all with a wonderfully cheery disposition. What made it so interesting was that she didn't actually work for Virgin Trains. She was an onboard cleaner employed by Alstom, the company we contract to clean our trains. Impressed, Tony introduced himself and complimented the woman on the outstanding, above-and-beyond job she was doing, before asking if she'd ever considered working for us as opposed to cleaning. He was stunned by her answer. She'd tried a couple of times, but, as she put it, "I wasn't good enough to pass the entrance test." Stung by this, Tony got on the phone to our HR team and asked that they conduct an immediate review of the hiring criteria, as, based on what he'd just been told, they were clearly filtering out exactly the kind of people we desperately wanted to filter in. They did, and within a couple of weeks the lady was hired as an onboard service assistant. She didn't last long in that job, though. Over the next 4 years, she steadily made her way up through the ranks and is now one of our regional station managers, looking after several of our train stations. Ever since that day's chance observation, Virgin Trains has been very clear in its recruiting priorities. We now hire for attitude and not paper qualifications. Cheers! The way Tony identified someone with the prerequisite attitude and passion has probably been repeated 1,000 times in different ways around Virgin over the years. After all, when one is in the business of customer service and you stumble upon someone who is a natural at it, then you have to do your best to scoop them up. I remember David Tate telling a very similar tale to Tony's. Around the corner from Virgin Atlantic's first home in New York City's Greenwich Village was a popular local bar that David, various staff members, and I, when in town, used to visit on a regular basis. One particular bartender there by the name of Phil never failed to impress David with the way he looked after his patrons. No matter how busy it was or how rude and demanding some customers became, he always got the correct drinks out quickly, kept multiple conversations going at the same time, and settled altercations with a smile. He was clearly an accomplished professional at what he did, and, as Tony had done on the train, David recognized the kind of intuitive flair for great customer service that we are always looking for. He thought Phil would be every bit as good at an airport counter as he was behind a bar. When David finally made the less than compelling pitch to Phil of, "How'd you like to consider a new job where you'll earn no tips and work highly irregular hours?" he laughed it off as some kind of a joke. A few days later, however, after some coaxing by David, he came around and said he'd do it. As suspected, Phil Kane's people skills were an instant fit for the airport customer service agent role and quickly led to a supervisor's job. Next, it was onwards and upwards to duty manager, and eventually he became an exemplary airport manager, working for 20 years or so at a number of Virgin Atlantic gateways around the world. I used to see Phil quite often at Newark, and one day couldn't resist asking how David had talked him into giving up the bar job and coming to work for us. His response was, "Well, to be honest, Richard, he didn't." Then, with a wink, he confided that, as a then single guy, it had really been the thought of all those attractive flight attendants getting off our flights every night that had swayed his decision. Whatever his motivation, and I can't fault him on that one, countless thousands of others, like Phil Kane, bring their own personal brands of passion to work with them every day all around our companies. They also bring along their knowledge, vitality, enthusiasm and vision, collectively known as passion, to either give birth to a dream of their own, or more often, to contribute to the efforts of a team of like-minded Virgin family members.